try again.
All right. Welcome to the Kayak Fishing Radio Show, The Late Show. My name is Rob, a bad backcast DeVore. Yeah. I think I need a serious adult beverage after listening to this stuff, man. Yeah. All right. Once again, welcome to the Kayak Fishing Radio Show. And it's the weekend after New Year's, man. What's going on out here? What's going on in the kayak fishing world on the West Coast? I'm located in Clearwater, Florida. You know, a lot of you already know that. You can also keep track of me on my blog. It's called abadbatcast.com. And we're on here, we're talking about kayak fishing. A couple of things to go over here real quick. There was an article in the local fish wrap here about the regulations regarding, fish and, and they posted a lot of the regulations and it was making me think, huh, you know, and everybody's, a lot of people always ask me about regulations and, once in a while the FWC will change some of the fish that you're allowed to keep, regulations, whether or not you're allowed to keep them, bag limits, size limits, things of that nature. And, the only thing I tell people is, if you can go to your Facebook page every day, you can check the FWC website for updates. Florida Wildlife and Commission, Steve, what do you call the, what's the FWC stand for again? it's slipping my mind all of a sudden.
It's the Florida Wildlife and Fish Commission.
Thank you, thank you. I knew it was Florida Wildlife something something. Yeah, we're go to the FWC.com, myfwc.com, and just check that a couple of times a week. If you have any questions, the worst fish you can get caught with is an illegal fish. And one of the best things that I love about that website is that they actually post, maybe not pictures and stuff, but they post about the people that they bust doing illegal things. Recently, there was a guy down in Port St. Lucie or Lauderdale, somewhere around there, that had an illegal. All of them are illegal. He had in his cooler a sea turtle. that's definitely illegal. And so, if you have any questions about fishing restrictions in Florida, go to myfwc.com. You can do it. Check it out a couple of times a week, and you'll never get caught with an illegal fish. All right, on the phone with me tonight, I have Steve Gibson from Sarasota, Florida, and he's running Southern Draw Kayak Fishing out of Sarasota. And how you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you?
Awesome so far. So tell me, you've been doing some of this stuff for a couple of years in the area. What's kayak fishing like down in Sarasota?
Well, actually, it's been real good lately. I've been doing real well on the charters, at least my clients have. We were talking before the show about fishing low tides, and what I like about it is this time of year we get some negative low tides, and that reduces your water service surface sometimes up to 40%. So, when you greatly reduce the amount of water that the fish can be in, that makes it a whole lot easier to find them. And we've been getting a lot of spotted sea trout, quite a few redfish, ladyfish, flounder, and that type of thing.
Yeah. I love the negative low tides because a lot of times around here, I fish out of Clearwater a lot, Sand Key and Dunedin Causeway and things of that nature. But you can get on some of these flats in the negative lows, and a lot of times those redfish get trapped up in there. And, they'll get trapped in these little, swimming pool-sized, puddles of water that are about, 6-8 inches deep. And they've been in there all night, man, and they're hungry. And just about anything you throw in there is going to get destroyed, you know, or close to it. So, you know, what have you been seeing very much a snook mortality this time of year? You know, I know it's been kind of cold, and, you know, you're out a lot. You seeing any dead snook, you know, belly up down there?
No, I'm not seeing any dead snook at all. No stunned snook, and I'm not hearing of any either. I've heard a couple of reports from down in the Charlotte Harbor area, and then up around Dunedin. I've heard of some reports up there, but down here, Sarasota Bay, southern Tampa Bay, all the way down to Punta Gorda, I just haven't heard of any.
Yeah, I haven't either. You know, some of the folks on the 8 o'clock show were telling me on the east coast of Florida over there, Space Coast, Dee Kaminsky fishes over there. You know, they were telling me that, you know, a couple of weeks ago that they were seeing a lot of dead sea trout, you know, like the monster gator trout, you know, in the 30-inch
mm-hmm.
range, you know. And I'm glad that we're not seeing anything like that around here either, you know.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing compared to last year. I mean, at least
yeah.
so far. Last year I got out, and in addition to the snook, we were seeing a lot of dead ladyfish, jack crevalle, you know, catfish, all sorts of different species. A friend of mine did run into a cold stun permit down in Charlotte Harbor the other day, and he didn't know whether it was going to make it, but I thought that was kind of I've never heard of any, first time I'd heard of a cold stun permit.
Yeah, I didn't know that they came up that far north.
Oh, yeah, we've got permit. We get them in Sarasota Bay every once in a while. Certainly out, I don't take the kayak out in the Gulf, but you know, there's plenty of permit out in the Gulf over the wrecks.
Oh, yeah. Now, have you ever done any West Coast fishing, you know, out there off of California or Portland, Oregon, or anything like that?
No, I sure wish I had. I've only been on the West Coast a couple times, and that's during my career as a sports writer. I covered the old All-American Bowl out of in Anaheim with the University of Florida against the University of Washington. But
cool.
When you're writing, you don't really have a lot of time to fish when you're out
absolutely.
There working.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because, you know, a lot of one of our stalwarts, as it were, that comes in and, you know, talks a lot is Isaac Miller from Portland, Oregon. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we both write for yakangler.com. And he comes in and he'll, you know, I'll be complaining about 4 foot, you know, waves or chop or something like that. And he's like, hey, dude, you know, he takes a lot, makes a lot of videos. And he'll say, hey, dude, check this out. And, you know, they're out there kayak fishing, you know, off the beach and off of Portland there. And it's like 8 and 9 foot seas, man. It looks like deadliest catch, you know.
Wow,
and they're out there in kayaks, you know.
I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, me either. That whole the whole West Coast, you know, kayak fishing thing is really, it's nuts. Some of the extremes that they go to get out there fishing. And, you know, some of the people that, you know, more or less invented the sport, you know, kind of hail from California and the West Coast out there. And I mean, you know, some of the gear that they take out there with them, you know, Isaac tells me he takes 500 feet of anchor rope out there with him. You know,
wow.
I mean, that's crazy. You know, these are the guys that you're seeing out there catching these salmon sharks and stuff. You know, you'll see the guy in his kayak is barely above the water and he's got a salmon shark sitting on his lap, you know. So
right.
those are some extreme anglers out there. But one of the things that I found that was funny was a lot of the West Coast folks on some of the message boards and forums out there, they don't know, you know, they're going, wow, you know, bag limits and size limits on snook and things like that. And, you know, they don't know why, you know, they don't understand that, you know, it's really a privilege, as it were, you know, to be able to have snook over here. And if you, you know, take care of the fishery that way, you know, with bag limits and closed seasons and stuff, you know, it'll be around for a long time. So have you, you know, do you have any luck, you know, finding any snook in the wintertime, down there?
Well, you know what? I don't really target them in the wintertime, although I'm thinking about this next week, maybe exploring one of our local creeks that's pretty well known for snook. You know what happens? Once that water gets down below about 55, the snook will head for the creeks and the rivers and the deep water canals, anywhere they can, because that water is a little bit warmer, and that's what helps sustain them or helps them survive the winter. And I think I'm going to try a creek next week and just to see what's going on. And it's interesting you're talking about the regulations and the bag limits and stuff. And, you know, there's a little history behind that. And when I moved to Florida in 1971, and at that time you had a four snook limit, and they only had a minimum size limit, no maximum. You could catch them as big as you wanted, but the minimum size limit was 18 inches. And can you imagine four 18-inch snook? Those are pretty small snook when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I did a lot of reading about, you know, the history of snook and, you know, down around Sanibel Island, you know, beach snooking or beach fishing for snook in the summertime is like, that's like one of the greatest places in the world to do that. Is down around
it's great, but we also have some excellent beach snooking here. In fact, that's one of my specialties. That's what I do most of the summer. It's to the point it's getting so popular with my clients that I don't put my kayak in the water in May, June, and July because you know, it's just we're out there catching a lot of snook, and it's pretty much all fly fishing. And normally on a trip with me, a morning of fly fishing for snook, it's all sight fishing, number one. And you're going to get a shot at about 400 snook on average.
Wow, that's pretty good. I haven't seen it quite that good up here, or else I'm going to the wrong spots or something. But
I don't think so. And I heard that this year that it was even tougher up there because of the cold weather kill in 2009. But the numbers where I was at weren't noticeably down all that much, but the catch was down in the summer of 2008. Excuse me, summer of 2009. We averaged 19 snook per trip, and that was a high of 41 one morning, and some lows of five or less. Well, this year we averaged less than 5 snook per trip. And
wow.
There was, you know, a couple of days where we got skunked. The best day we had out there was 21 snook.
Yeah.
It can be tough, but it's all sight fishing, and that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things, you know, about that is the sight fishing and fly fishing at the same time. Because mm-hmm. I personally, I love fly fishing. I don't get to do it so much out of a kayak. But you know, I usually do take a fly rod with me, but, you're sitting down, you know, I don't sit down the whole time, but,
right.
You know, sitting down and you're sitting there with it, you know, a lap full of slack and you're trying to figure out, you know, what do I do with this? And then, you know, one instance over the summer I had a tarpon take off on me and, I got a loop wrapped around my sandal and it, you know, ripped my sandal off and everything else, you know.
Well, you know, it's the old Murphy's Law of fly line, and that is the fly line will catch upon anything it can.
It will.
And it will. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my whole fleet is native watercraft ultimate, so I stand in mine and fly cast quite a lot. But there's a couple of tricks when you're sitting down that can put some, give you some distance. And what I do is strip off out of, you know, the line that I can handle, no more. I just place the line between my legs and the cockpit right in front of me. But once I get the line out, what I do is a quick water haul. I let that fly tick the water, take it back on a false cast, and then I can shoot the rest. And it usually gives you all the distance you need. And you got to remember, too, and you know this very well, Rob, is that when you're fly fishing, especially out of a kayak, you don't need to be as far away as you might in a skiff. You can get a lot closer to these fish.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's now let me ask you this. So you do use the natives. Mm-hmm. You know, Dee Kaminsky swears by those things. She's on mm-hmm. in the Space Coast over there. And,
right.
and she stands up and sight fishes all the time, too.
Right.
Now, is there a certain advantage to, like, the natives as far as standing up and being able to – because I'm a Malibu guy myself, and I can
right.
say, you know,
well,
it's –
natives are built with they're built with a tunnel hull, and so they're very, very stable.
Right.
And you know, you can stand up and fly cast in them, so that tells you how stable they are. And
yeah.
I stand up and fly cast. I can stand up and I can fight fish. So it's really no big deal. I do it quite often. I've got a push pole. And I like to get – one of my favorite things to do is get on the sandbars in southern Tampa Bay, those long, wide sandbars.
Yeah.
And I just pole along those sandbars looking for redfish, looking – a lot of big trout on there. Sometimes you get some big snook out there and you get a lot of sharks. And just pole along, just take your time on the look, and you see a fish and, you know, put the pole down, pick up the fly rod or spinning rod, whatever you're fishing, and make your cast.
Yeah, no, you know, my thing, my specialty, if I was to have a specialty, is, is night fishing, and we'll load up the kayaks, and we'll go out dock fishing at night, right? And
sure,
we'll find all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's crazy. But that's like the time that we catch the most fish, and it's, we have a blast in the summertime, you know? I mean, we get into some really good trout, too, in the summertime.
Oh, I would imagine, yeah.
I mean,
well,
you know.
Last time I was out doing something like that was back in probably the second week of December, and I hit one of my spots that I fish quite often, and got out there before daylight, and there's a lighted dock on the way out, and I got on fly. I got snook, trout, and redfish before daylight on fly. So
yeah,
pretty neat.
That's awesome. You know, in the some of the places that we fish are like these, you know, these $1 million homes, right? That have all their docks out there. And it's great but it's really funny. And I'll ask you about this. You know, the underwater lights that they have where they like the green ones or the blue ones or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put those out. You know, a lot of those folks have those. But I always find that we have a hard time catching fish on those because this is just my theory. Is that it lights it from the bottom, and the fish get a better look at it, you know. Any other time, you know, if it's the sun or just a regular old, you know, light hanging off the edge of a dock somewhere, it's going to be,
right. You
know, it's going to be the silhouette, you know. But they're seeing this stuff. I mean, they could probably, you know, tell you what kind of, you know, read what's on your lure and everything else, you know.
Right.
So, you know, it's really weird. I don't know if you've fished those or anything like that, or if you've ever found.
Well,
in fact,
that first light I was telling you about was an underwater light, and I caught all three species from around it. And I do fairly well there, but there's some other, you know, more typical above the surface lights out there too that I catch fish on.
Yeah, and that's not. I mean, it's just really weird. It seems like the numbers that we get, you know, are more on just a regular old, you know, fluorescent light hanging off the end of a dock as opposed to the underwater lights, man. It's really funny.
Right. And a lot of it has to do too with the water movement that you've got around the particular dock and light. You know, the better the current you have, the better the fishing usually is going to be. Of course,
yeah,
the water depth, you got to have the water depth too.
Yeah, most of these docks that we go in this area have, you know, they're about 8 feet deep of water around them, and, you know, 8 to 10, and they're, you know, the really good docks. Now, you know, there's inlets, you know, there's ins and outs and these little cul-de-sac things, but there's, you know, the ones where we catch the biggest fish are the ones with the most current running by it. You know, they're like sticking out into
absolutely.
The main channel there. And actually, I got like my best trout this year on fly. It was a 25-inch trout right out from under a dock there.
that's a pretty nice trout in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially in the summertime, I was really surprised myself. But those, that's like for me, you know, in this area, you know, those are the best times for us to go out. You know, a couple of guys, you know, we get out there and we'll put those, you know, battery-powered lanterns on our kayaks and get some headlamps on and stuff, and we just get out there, and, man, it's a blast, man. So we get into such heavy action sometimes that it's just, you know, it seems like every cast.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've noticed it, and I don't know if it's my imagination, but those snook sure do seem to fight harder at night.
Yes, I did notice that, and so do the trout too. I found,
right.
You know, the bigger trout. You know, you'll feel the hit, and you'll go, and you'll start. You know, you put some pressure on it, and then all of a sudden, it just yanks you back under the dock. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me. Do you just fly fish, or do you?
No.
Some of the spinning stuff too.
No, I would say that probably 70% of my clients are fly fishermen, but. I also get, you know, the rest are spinning, and they run from all experience levels, from beginner to pretty crafty veteran.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of fly fishing.
That's awesome. Do you tie, too?
Yes, I sure do.
Yeah, what's your favorite thing to tie, like, you know, let's say this time of year?
Well, you know, I don't know. If the time of year has anything to do with it, we were talking about beach snook fishing, and I do my it's called a DT variation. There's a story behind it. A guide down in Naples, Florida, we were talking, and I always used a Lefty's Deceiver out on the beach for the snook, and they worked pretty well. Well, he sent me a DT special. I don't know what DT stands for, but that's
yeah, I never knew that either.
he sent me one, and he said, this is the only fly you'll ever need for the beach. Well, the DT special was nothing but a Stewart tarpon fly tied in all white. What I did over the years, I've refined it a little bit. I just tweaked it and changed it a little bit. Rather than splaying the feathers on the end, I face them. I also don't cover the hook shank in thread. I just you know, build up the head, put some eyes on it, and epoxy it. And I call it the variation, and it works real well. And he was right. That's about the only fly I've ever used out on the beach for the last 20 years. So that's one fly that I tie. And then the other one, of course, is my Myakka minnow, which is a multi-purpose fly that works excellent in fresh water. And it's taken everything from bluegills and made the transition into saltwater up to 150-pound tarpon, because it can be tied on any size hook, you know. A friend of mine had some tarpon feeding around one of the bridges here a couple summers ago, and he came in and he told me, he says I've got these tarpon located, he says, but I can't get them to hit anything. And I, you know, talked to him a little bit more, and he said, well, what they're doing is they're herding up glass minnows around the bridge pilings. So I went home, and I tied him up three Myakka minnows on three-out hooks, and called me the next day and said he jumped three fish, and all of them on the Myakka minnows. But we've taken all sorts of fish on that. They've taken snook, and, of course, get out there in the Gulf and get bonitas on them. They've taken barramundi.
Wow.
All sorts of freshwater fish. So that's a good fly.
Yeah, did you? I don't know if you saw it. There were some pictures up around this week, but there was a record, a world record barramundi out in Australia. I saw it on Yak Angler. I can't be certain if they caught it on a kayak or not, but it was 98 pounds.
Wow. Well, I've never caught anything like that. The biggest one I ever caught was about 8 pounds, and you won't believe this, but it came from Florida.
Yeah, oh yeah, over in Central Florida, there's a place.
Yeah,
you can,
exactly. Yeah, we went over there and we caught about 50 of them one day. It was a pretty neat experience. It's nothing that I would go pay and do, but it was a notch in your pistol grip. It was just something, you know. I'd never caught that fish before, and it was pretty neat. They fight pretty hard, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I've heard. You know, people are, you know, I've heard that they're related to snook, and everybody is, you know, pretty high on the prospect of, you know, getting those things in Florida. And I'm not sure if they're going to stock them, or if they're going to use them, you know, farm raise them for food or what. But
well, you know,
you know what?
It all depends on how the state of Florida views it. The state of Florida has a rather strange view on exotic fish. They don't like any exotic fish except for the exotic fish that the state plants. You know, they planted peacock bass in South Florida in 1984, and that's been a boon to the fishery down there in the canals in Miami-Dade County and up into Broward. But they hate the Mayan cichlids and the Oscars and the walking catfish and the tilapia and the snake fish. But, you know, I do trips down in the Everglades, and I just love the Oscars and the Mayan cichlids. They're great. They're a great fly rod fish. The Oscar is no doubt one of the strongest freshwater fish that I've ever hooked in my life. And wow. I mean, you've got to go a minimum of 8 pound test tippet on those. And you know, typically when I'm fishing freshwater for panfish, I'm using 8x tippet. You know. And,
wow!
You've got to go a minimum of 8 pound test on these things because they're so structure oriented and their first move is to get you back in that structure. And
yeah.
An Oscar is a very mean, gregarious, bulldog like fish. The exotics were hurt last year by the cold weather. In fact, a lot of them died off. They're very prolific, so no doubt they'll come back. But they're not in the numbers, and we were getting. Oh, easily a couple hundred fish per person when we would go down there. And there, I know the last trip that I made a year ago in December was, I would say, at least 65% to 70% of the fish we caught were Oscars.
Wow.
The state probably doesn't mind that they were killed off. But like I said, if the state plants it, it's okay. And if they don't, then they don't like it.
You know, I was just watching a video, there's this crazy bunch of dudes that live around, I think they're based out of the Keys, out of Cudjoe Key, and they make fly fishing videos, okay, world angling. And these guys, you know, they always have stuff in the fly fishing film tour. And these guys are something else, man. But they made a video or a new movie called High in the Lowlands. And it's fly fishing for snook in the Everglades. And, man, let me tell you something. They're pulling out some 20-pounders out of there, man. That is
fun. Oh, absolutely.
I watch that stuff, and I get all fired up. I'm like, man, get me down there in a kayak. Because some of the places that they were going were like, you know, they had to take the pulling platform off to be able to get underneath some of these, tree canopies and, you know, just to get to where the fish were. And,
I fished a lot down there, and you're absolutely right. There are some really out of the way places, and there's no doubt there's places where the fish have never even seen a fly or a lure or a bait.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great place. People don't realize how, you know, you think Everglades and you think, you know, for the longest time, I think largemouth bass, you know,
right.
You think lily pads and all that stuff. Well,
sure.
Yeah, that's down there too, but also, you know, people don't realize that that's a great, great, you know, saltwater fishery too. You know, you're going to have your redfish, and you're definitely going to have some, you know, some snook in there, and you might run into some juvenile tarpon or something like that, you know, but that's a great, great fishery down there, man.
Well, it is, and I do a lot of fishing down there, people, you know, some people might not realize, but the canals on the side of the road along US 41 down there, and I'm talking about south of Marco Island, south of I guess it would be southeast of Port of the Islands. Those canals down there are just they were famous because those are the places that that Joe Bates, Ted Williams, Charlie Waterman, all the great fly early pioneers of saltwater fly fishing in this state used to go. They'd drive over from Miami and fish those canals along US 41, and they were primarily targeting snook. In fact, the traffic was so light on the road back in those days that they'd be in a truck, they'd have a driver and a couple of fly fishermen in the bed of the truck, and they'd just slowly drive along the road, and they'd watch the snook pushing water, and then they'd get out and fish for them.
That's awesome. That's a way to do it, man. And you know, it's
right.
Really funny. You know, you see some of these you look at some of the old pictures, you know, the old black and white pictures from the Keys, and you know, you got guys out there standing out there with you know, tarpon that are, you know, bigger than they are and stuff, you know, and
mm-hmm.
there's a whole, you know, they're all up on hooks, you know, and they got like 10 of them laying out there, you know. Man, what fishing must have been like back then.
Well, I'm sure it was fantastic, but you know, especially it had to be fantastic because look at the equipment that they had to use back in those days. They were, you know, if you were fly fishing, you were using there probably wasn't really a lot of saltwater fly tackle per se. Everything
right.
was kind of jerry-rigged and made on the go, and of course the rods were all fiberglass back in those days. And
yeah, or bamboo maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
They used to use silk line to go out there to, you know, fly fishing for tarpon in the Keys, you know. And I just, man, it's really hard. You know, you got a couple of scraps of silk line there to catch a, you know, 180-pound fish with. Man, it's just ridiculous.
Right, exactly.
But, hey, you know, do you ever get down to the Keys and, you know, go after any bonefish or anything like that?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do. I love fishing, and if I had, you know, if I had one fish, that would be it. I just love fishing for bonefish. It's great. I don't get down there as often as I'd like, but I still like catching bonefish. I've caught a lot of bonefish, and I've never caught them on anything but a fly. The interesting story: the first bonefish I ever caught, I was fishing in an Orvis Dealer's fly school tournament. What it was a 3-day deal where we went to school for 2 days, learning all about fly fishing in the Keys and that type of thing. And the third day was a tournament, and they got us guides, and we went out, and it was kind of neat. It was, of course, the first 2 days the weather was just beautiful. The third day the wind's blowing between 20 and 25, and as luck would have it, I had a great guide, and he put us on some fish. And that afternoon, I hooked a fish on off a Shell Key. If I'd have known how big it was, I'd have choked. But I had no clue. I should have known, because it was on a big flood tide, and this fish was still tailing. So you knew he had to be a big fish. But I hooked that fish. He ran off the flat into the channel. My guide stuck the pole in the flat, tied off, and says, "You're on your own, because I can't pole against this wind." And he says, "I'm going to tell you," he says, "if that fish goes down in that channel, he's going to cut you off on the coral." Well, about that time, the fish popped up, came back on the flat, and I finally got him in, and it weighed 14 pounds. And my guide got that fish out of the water, and he just started laughing. He says, "Man," he says, "you better quit, because you'll never, ever catch a larger one." And he's right. I've never caught one.
God. That was your first bonefish?
Yeah, and incidentally, it won the tournament.
I imagine so. You know, for anybody that doesn't know, that's a serious bonefish. I don't care where you live.
But by my way of thinking, at least in as far as fly fishing goes, that has to be ranked in the top 15, 25 ever taken on fly.
Yeah,
because the world record's just a little over 15 pounds on fly, I think.
And what's the state record? You know. Offhand?
Oh, it's probably right in that neighborhood, you know.
Yeah.
Probably right in that neighborhood. Your biggest bonefish are going to come from the Isla Mirada area. You might go over, you know, you might go over into Bahamas, Venezuela, Costa Rica, or not Costa Rica, but Mexico, and you're going to get a lot of bonefish. But a majority, you know, if they average 3-4 pounds, that's a good one there. In the Keys, there's a lot of big fish down there. They're tough to catch, though. They're really tough.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one thing that people don't realize, and I say this all the time, is that one of the best bonefish flats in all of Florida is at Long Key State Park. You know, there's a campground down there. And you can go camping, and, you know, you can have your tent there. And when that tide comes in, you just walk out of your tent, and the water's like 5 feet away. And you're out there looking for bonefish, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, and one of the beautiful things about that place is that you got good bottom there. You get over on the bay side down there, and you'll sink up to your waist in the mall.
I know. I found that out the hard way.
Yeah, exactly. I did that one time.
You know, across the street from Long Key State Park, and about a half a mile down the road towards Key West, there's this big hole right next to the shore. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, hey, that thing's got to hold fish. You know, thinking, you know, any sort of a, you know, big depth variation around this, you know, shallow water is going to, you know, have something in it. So, you know, we went out there, and there's a seawall, you know, a little parking area there and a seawall. And I'm not kidding you, man. I jumped off that seawall and went up to my knees. and it was dry. It was like, you know, the tide was just coming in, and it was, you know, allegedly, you know, supposed, you know, it was, there was no water there, in other words, and it was just muck, man. And I tell you, it took me all I had to get out of that thing. And, you know, after a while, you know, my sandals were getting sucked off and everything, and I just said, you know, look, You just bugger the sandals. I'll just leave those there, you know. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that is one of the greatest, you know, for big bonefish, you know, for bonefish in Florida anywhere, that's probably one of the best places. You know, big bonefish, yeah, definitely in the Keys. You're right, Isle Mirado around that area. One thing, you know, and not to jump off of that, but another thing is, you know, when people have, you know, you're having a hard time catching fish, and since I'm on, I got to remember this because I'm on the bonefish kick. One thing that I do, even in the summertime, is downsize, you know, my lures, flies, whatever. And a lot of times I'll fish around here with bonefish flies, and it works mm-hmm. because a lot of times they're keyed in on, you know, smaller prey. One of the things that, you know, and I was talking earlier about this, is that, you know, people are out here chucking, you know, 4 and 5 inch, 6 inch lures and flies, you know, and if you're getting skunked, switch over to a bonefish fly, man. You know, it's that simple.
And, yeah, there you go.
I mean, you know, it's not a fix at all the time, but a lot of times I did find that does work. Even when tarpon, like you said, you know, they'll be keyed in on glass minnows or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of what do you got in store for 2011? You got any trips planned anywhere? Anything like that?
Well, no. Well, with the exception of a family vacation, which is not going to be a fishing vacation, we're going to head up to New York City. And
all right.
My wife and daughter, and she booked. Last week she texted me while I was out on a trip, and she's booked our hotel in Times Square, and we're all excited about that. I'm sure, though, that I'll get some fishing in somewhere on the vacation. But other than that, I've been thinking about, you know, we were talking about bone fishing, and I've been thinking about putting a trip together, taking the kayaks down to the Keys. I just can't help but think that you could just really, really get on the bone fish in your kayak, you know. I know
absolutely.
A lot of spots down there, and all you got to do is, especially dawn and dusk, all you got to do is stake out, and the tails pop up, you know, like someone's just turning on the switch. It's just pretty cool. And in the kayak, you know, the beauty of it is, and you know this as well as I do, is that when you're in that kayak, the fish don't even know you're there.
That's true. You know, that's one thing that I love about, you know, kayak fishing is the peacefulness that I get, you know, and I'm not mm-hmm. like, I'm not going old, you know, hippie guy here or anything like that. I'm just, you know, I can never get over that, man. I get out there and it'll be, you know, right around dawn or dusk. And I, you know, it's just, to me, it's just peaceful. And I just, there's not a sound, man. And I love that, you know, and it's hard.
Absolutely.
It's hard to get that through to somebody that's never done it before, you know?
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, I've discovered that, you know, we just catch so many fish out of the kayak. And the best example is I am a co-founder of the Fall Fly Fishing Challenge down here in Sarasota. In fact, last November 6th, we had our sixth annual. And, I have a guy that I usually fish with in his skiff, his powerboat, and he called me this year and he says, "Are we fishing together?" And I said, "Sure, if you want to fish out of the kayak." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, look, if we're in your skiff, one of us is on top of the poling platform, poling that boat." I said, "So when you're poling, you're not fishing." I said, you come with me in the kayak, you know, I said, "You're fishing 100% of the time. All you have to do is worry about yourself. You don't have to worry about me. You do what you want to do. I do what I want to do." Well, to make a long story short, he got a charter, so he couldn't make the tournament. So I'm just fishing on my own, and I fished one dock that morning for an hour. I didn't have to make any more than a 20-foot cast with the fly rod, and I took 7 snook off of one dock. And
wow.
Easily won the snook division. went out over some grass patches, caught enough trout to win the trout division, although you can only win one division in the tournament. But I had 105 inches of trout, And the guy the trout division, the guy that won the trout division only had 46 inches. So,
wow.
You know, there you go. But the point being is that I was only 20 foot away from that dock. Now, you know, that's pretty close. So you're not having to make a long cast. Your casting accuracy is just pinpoint. And I took 7 snook off of that one dock. And
wow.
I just truly believe that's a testament to the stealthiness of the plastic kayak.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of times we'll get, when we're dock fishing at night,
mm-hmm.
like to go in and, we don't get super, maybe 25, 40 feet at the most away from the dock, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, if we're not, most of the time it's just you pull up to the first dock and it's bang, 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 and you fish it until they quit hitting. Well, sometimes,
right.
When you know that fish are there, when you can see them, bait fish blasting out of the water and everything else, and you're casting, you're throwing stuff over there, you throw past the light, and you're not getting anything, I'm like, well, wait a minute, let's go see what's up, and after a while, you're there. My rule most of the time is if you're there 15 or 20 minutes and no fish, time to move. But I just want
right.
to go see what's going on. So I'll pull up next to the dock, and just sit and wait real quietly, for a few, maybe 5-10 minutes. And a lot of times you'll see, sometimes they're just, they're just dialed in on a certain, certain size bait or a certain thing. And, if you just match the hatch sometimes, that works a lot better for us. But the main thing is that, most of the time when you pull up to a dock like that, in the areas that we fish, it's gangbusters, man. It's like one of the best tactics that I've learned is that you one of my favorite lures is a Mirador Miradine pardon
mm-hmm.
me. And that thing it suspends down to 14 inches. It's great. And what I do is I'll cast it way as far as I can past the dock, not into the next county or anything like that, but
mm-hmm.
way past the dock, and I'll speed reel that thing through the light, okay? And a lot of times what that does is, as soon as that thing hits the water, you got about 200 ladyfish eyes looking at it. Number one,
right?
Okay?
Yeah.
And I find that if you rip that thing through there at a blazing speed, it has the fish, other than the ladyfish, have to make a split-second decision, one of two things. Either they're going to get that, they're going to see that thing getting out of town, and they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, and they're gonna get it, or not, That's just, for me, that's a great summer dock tactic. Try that sometime.
Well, absolutely. What you're doing is you're getting a reaction strike.
Absolutely.
And, sometimes those can be the greatest strikes. Have you tried the tiny Miradine yet?
Yes, and I do. I like all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually when I go out. I have two spinning rods and my fly rod, and
mm-hmm.
usually on one spinning rod I have one of the Miradines on there, and the other one I usually have DOA shrimp on.
Right.
So those are like my two go-to lures.
Well, those are good lures. You make good choices.
Yeah. But, so what would you suggest this time of year as far as like a lure or, for wintertime fishing for anything? What would you suggest if you're, going after reds or trout?
A couple come to mind. I've been doing really well on the DOA Cal Jig, C-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
I use the 1/16 ounce head,
right?
And I like the gold paddle tail. That works well for me. That's been producing really well. And I also like the DOA shrimp. That seems to work real well. I usually like the gold flake shrimp and the night glow shrimp, but I've been using this new color that they have. It's half night glow and half gold flake. The night glow's on top and the gold flake's on the bottom.
Wow.
That has been working really well for me, catching a lot of trout. on it. And I like the DOA shrimp. It's a great sight fishing lure. If you're targeting if you're sight fishing for reds, it's a really good sight fishing lure. But this time of year, I like that 1/16 ounce DOA cow jig. That's been working really well for me.
Yeah, you know, I use those, but my favorite color to use those in are the I use root beer with a chartreuse tail.
Mm-hmm.
And I like a lightweight jig head, too, you know.
I
tell you, anytime I get a chance to finesse fish, you know, it reminds me when I used to, you know, before I got into saltwater fishing at all, I used to bass fish a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of some of my bass fishing, my finesse bass tactics, where you use the 6-inch worm with no weight, and you Carolina rig it or Texas rig it, whatever you want to call it, and just a worm hook and the worm, and I used to love fishing that thing, man. You just move that thing fast enough to get the tail moving a little bit. And that was like a, you know, June bug color, and that in anything, you know, saltwater fishing that you know, I always take it back to that, you know. So anytime I get a chance to finesse fish, I love it, man.
Well, it's funny. I had my wife out the other day, and the trout bite was going on, and but the wind was up. The wind was coming out of the south, and the tide was coming in real hard. And coupled with that south wind, it was almost like a fast moving river. She was using the 1/16 ounce jig head, and she was having trouble staying in contact with that jig. And I don't think she was getting down on the bottom where all these trout were, you know, because the water's so cold and these fish are so cold, they're right on the bottom. So what I did was I moved her to a little heavier jig. I went to an eighth, and she started catching fish because she could stay in contact and feel that jig, and it was getting down to where it needed to be. So, you know, while I prefer that 16th, there's times, you know, depending on the current, depending on the depth of the water that you need to go heavier. But that's why they make, you know, different sizes of jig heads.
Oh, yeah. Now, do you ever use the like any sort of crabs? You know, one of my favorite things, you know, fishing around mangroves, you know, any sort of, you know, in this time of year, too. Any sort of like a fiddler crab imitation, or you know, a small crab, man, that'll get the fish's attention. Do you ever use that?
Well,
that?
I use crab patterns when I'm fly fishing for especially like tailing redfish, certainly for bonefish. A little tan or a beige merkin crab has worked real well for me. Crab patterns always work well for ladyfish and. Ladyfish, redfish, and you know, because they're natural crab eaters, and people will be surprised. You know, I don't really fish crab patterns for snook, but snook eat crabs. I've caught a number of snook on the beach that have coughed up crabs after you land them. So obviously they're feeding on them.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. You know, it's kind of funny
know,
if you see how a snook mouth is set up. You know, it doesn't have the crushers that the redfish do, but you know, if they get something small enough, you know, they'll eat
it. Sure. Absolutely.
But so what would you have any like a new gear that you're like, man, I can't believe I've kayak fished this long without it?
No, you know what? I'm pretty basic and pretty simple, but one of my best pieces of equipment as far as the kayak goes is I use the paddle pole that's put out by Native Watercraft. It's 9 foot long. It's carbon fiber. It's super light. It's pointed on one end and it's got a thin blade on the other. And I've got a holder on the starboard side on the starboard gunwale, which that pole rests in when I'm not using it. And then when it comes time that I want to stand up and pole, I take it out and just put my paddle in the holder. And, you know, depending on the bottom and the depth of the water, if it's shallow and hard bottom, you turn it around and use the pointed end to pull yourself along. If it's soft bottom, you can use that thin blade end. And certainly if you're crossing a channel or deeper water, then you can just paddle yourself across, and it works really well. I really like it because it's lightweight and it's strong, and it's kind of really been a boon. I you know, I knew they had it, and I just wasn't sure. You know, you didn't know if you'd get it, and it'd be flimsy and wouldn't be worth anything. But it was well worth it. It's a nice piece of equipment.
Yeah, I was wondering because I see a lot of pictures of you on your Facebook page there about you know, you're standing up paddling, you know, but that's great. You know, I do this. I use my paddle. You know, when I stand up, sometimes I'll paddle. But I have an 8-foot homemade stakeout pole, and a lot of times I'll actually pole along with that thing. But and
right,
that's
exactly.
What I thought that you had. You know,
so well, I started out using a one of the stick it anchor pins.
Yeah, yeah.
Which worked well because you know it's a point on one end and a T handle on the other. And, of course, you can push yourself along with either end depending on the bottom. And I found that for example, if you had hard bottom, you know, you could use the pointy end. But if you crossed a channel or deeper water, just turn it around. And that T-handle, you can actually paddle yourself with it, at least enough to get across a 25-foot channel. It, you know, had enough resistance that it would move the kayak. And they work fine. Work fine really well, and they're excellent, you know, stakeout poles. But I had the chance to get one of these paddle poles from Native Watercraft and really like it a lot.
Yeah, that's a great invention, you know, I often wondered, you know, with the, you know, since stand-up paddleboarding has kind of taken off, and I'll be in a kayak shop and, you know, I'll see one of those stand-up paddleboard paddles. And I'm thinking, that might not be a bad idea to use, you know, when you're standing up. But, you know, I can only take so much gear with me. I'm very basic myself.
Right.
I use a Malibu Stealth is my ride. And it has a center console in it, you know, like a center hatch right there in front of your seat. And I put all of my gear in there, you know, like my lures and, you know, any, you know, multi-tool, anything I might need, you know, tool-wise. And all of that, I don't take a crate with me or anything like that. And it just, everything fits in there, you know. And the two poles and the fly rod, and I'm good to go.
you go.
Yeah.
Sometimes less is certainly more. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I know that I carry probably 10 times more than I need to carry, but you know how that is.
Yeah. Oh, I know a lot of guys that do that. One of my buddies, I swear, man, he brings the kitchen sink with him every time we go out, and it takes like, you know, I'm glad that he gets there before me, you know, because if we got there at the same time, I'd already be in the water, you know, while he's still loading up his kayak.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, hey, you know, some people feel better, you know, taking all that stuff. And, you know, he actually is coming over to my side where the, you know, simple is easier.
Right.
School of thought,
it's a little bit different when I go by myself. I carry a lot less equipment. But when I, you know, when I take people out, you know, you would feel rather silly if all of a sudden there's a great topwater bite going on and you didn't have any topwater plugs or you know, you had tailing redfish and you want to throw jerkworms at them and you didn't have any jerkworms. So you got to make sure you have all this stuff. Plus, I carry I've got a bow bag from Water Trail, which is a subsidiary of Native Watercraft, and it's shaped just like the bow of the kayak, and it fits right up in my bow. And in it, I carry, you know, a couple of pairs of wading boots, three sets of rain gear, a first aid kit, you know, just in case something happens. And you just never know. And because when I take people out, you can't assume they're going to have rain gear or they're going to have, you know, wading boots or what have you. So you just got to always be prepared. And that's a really neat thing. It just fits right up there in the bow. And it's, you know, kind of almost pointed on one end and it just fits the contour. So that's a pretty neat thing. But when I go by myself, I carry a lot less gear.
Oh yeah. We're on the phone here with Steve Gibson from Southern Draw Kayak Fishing. Hey, we got about 5 minutes left, and can you tell us a little bit about your website? And you know, if somebody's interested in going out fishing with you one day, what's the best way to get a hold of you and your website?
Well, my website, which I think I'm very proud of it. I think it's one of the better websites that I've seen around. It's www.kayakfishingsarasota.com. That's www.kayakfishingsarasota.com. And if they want to reach me, they can take a look at the website, reach me through it, or they can call me at 941-284-3406.
Awesome. So do you run your website yourself? Did you do it from the ground up?
Well, yes, I do run it myself, but my brother-in-law built the site for me.
Awesome.
He was in the business of designing websites, and he's no longer in that business. But he did just a fantastic job. I don't know if you've seen it, but check it out sometime. I think you'll be impressed. And we've been really updating it. We added a sponsors page here recently, where you can go to and click on the sponsors, take you to their website. I've got a photo page, fishing report page, and the page that all the different trips that I offer and the price structures. Got a little bio page, and it's just a really attractive website.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just switched mine over. I had a blog for a while, and then I switched. I said, I want to get into guiding and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And I kind of wanted to do it, with my own domain name and the whole bit. And Mark Watanabe from Yak Angler, he created Yak Angler.
Uh-huh.
he's the one that designed my site and everything, and we kind of put it all together, and I like it. It's great. It's easy for me to run. Very rarely do I ever have to call him up and say, "Hey, Mark, I was putting this code in and I totally screwed it up, dude."
Well, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and the easier it is, then you can keep it fresh and keep it updated, and that's a tough thing. But we took it over and we've been able to do it. My wife is a computer guru, so she helps me out a lot. In fact, she does most of it. I just write the stuff to put on there that needs to be, and she gets it on there. But I've got a statistics tool that I was looking at it this morning, and I'm averaging 256 hits a day on that website. And
wow,
and
that's really good.
It tells me how many hits I get a day. It tells me the page they enter on, the page they exit on, the pages they visited while they were there. And it also breaks it down by hour of the day. So I know, at midnight, I know how many hits I'm getting at midnight, how many hits at 11 a.m. And it's pretty neat. And I know where they come from, and I know which site referred them to me.
Yeah, I do
that's
that too.
Neat.
I love looking at that stuff. And you'll find this funny. Fox, I don't know if Fox 13 broadcasts down there or not, but
yes.
The weekend, I mentioned, four times in the last year, because I was like, wow, this is really weird. Four times in the last year, they have their weekend weather anchor, Sheena Parveen, on there, okay,
mm-hmm.
on Fox 13. And, she's just a beautiful girl, and watching her do the weather on weekends, when I'm getting ready to go fishing, is, that just makes my day, So,
right.
Anyway, mention her a couple of times, and, I get more people coming to my website searching for Sheena Parveen, and Sheena Parveen pictures, than they do fishing-related stuff.
Well, there you go.
Right. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Steve, man, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob.
Oh, absolutely, man. It was a great time talking to you. And can you give me your website one more time, please?
I certainly can. www.kayakfishingsarasota.com.
Awesome. Well, good luck, man. And I'll talk to you later. And thank you again for coming on.
All right. My pleasure, Rob, and good luck.
Take care. All right. Steve Gibson, Sarasota, Florida. Kayak fishing, redfish, snook, fly fishing, the whole bit. So if you're into that, get on his website there. And this brings us to the end of another edition of the always popular and always illustrious Kayak Fishing Radio Late Show. So we'll see you again next week. Same bat time, same bat station. Later.